Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists from around the world. My name is Ramesh Vaitalingam, and today's interview is with Professor Aloysius Siau from the University of Toronto. Aloysius and I met at a conference on sex selection at the Centre for Market and Public Organisation at the University of Bristol. During his visit, he also presented a paper called A Theory of Menopause, and I began by asking him why menopause was something that needed explaining.
What's kind of surprising is that menopause is not common among mammals and certainly not present in any other primate species other than humans. So one thing, it's rare. And from evolutionary theory perspective, it's also anomalous. Postmenopausal women still consume resources which could be otherwise given to her offsprings. So from evolutionary theory, you have an organism that is consuming resources but not adding to future fertility and depriving resources from her offsprings, which could increase future fertility. So that's a problem from a theory point of view.
And it's this issue around resources, really, which is why an economist comes to be thinking about these things. That's the kind of link with evolutionary biological questions.
Right. So let me just say that there is an existing theory that evolutionary biologists have thought about, and they call it the grandmother hypothesis. And that hypothesis basically says these post-reproductive grandmothers essentially help their offsprings to survive, and maybe to have more kids, and also to look after the grandkids. So while they are not producing kids directly themselves, they further the survival of their offsprings and grandoffsprings. That theory, I think it's interesting. The evidence on it is mixed. And part of the reason why it's difficult to get conclusive evidence is, one, is that even though post-reproductive grandmothers have more grandkids, part of the reason could be that women who live long enough to be post-reproductive have long-lived genes, which also says that their grandchildren are going to be healthier. So the fact that they have more grandchildren is not necessarily what they do directly, but the fact that they may have healthy genes. Another issue that comes up is the question of reverse causality. Whether post-reproductive grandmother who's consuming resources but not producing future fertility justify consuming those resources by helping out their offsprings and their grandoffsprings. So then again, you have a correlation, but the causality is reversed.
So you feel that the grandmother theory is unsatisfactory, which is why you started thinking about an alternative theory. And you started off by thinking about it in terms of looking at chimps, which are our nearest primate relatives.
Yes. Biologists have studied chimps, and suddenly most of the evidence point to these chimps not going through any period of menopause at all. Okay, so and they are our, it turns out they are our nearest relatives also among the primates. And chimps, fertility of chimps is kind of interesting. They live in troops of mixed gender, of about 15 to 50 chimps in a troop. And when a female chimp is about 8 to 10 years old, she becomes sexually active. Menarche begins at age 10, which is when she begins to menstruate. And the first birth occurs somewhere between age 12 to 20. Now, it turns out that these female chimps are quite promiscuous, and they would essentially mate with every male chimp in the troop each time they ovulate. As a consequence, males have no idea who the father of the infant that is born. And because they don't know who the father of the infant actually is, male chimps don't contribute much to survival of the offspring, nor they contribute much resources to the females, because they are not sure actually who produced the offspring. So chimps, female chimps essentially bear the burden both of childbirth, and also investing in their own children. So in general, you would think that if the female chimps were aware of this whole cause of childbearing, they wouldn't want to have as many kids as nature would want them to have. The male chimps, of course, are happy to have more kids because they don't bear any of the cost of having those kids. The nature solves that problem by, of course, making chimps have a desire for sex when the female ovulates. So chimps have sex, and of course, as a consequence of having sex, they have kids. So put it another way, the chimps are not consciously able to control how many offsprings they'll have.
So the key element to your theory is then taking this idea of the chimps and then you add a certain kind of intelligence to that which would make them more like us, and then thinking about the effect that that intelligence will have on their approach to thinking about having offspring.
That's exactly right. So I was beginning to think about, well, what happens if you give this chimp a very specific intelligence, in particular an understanding of where children comes from, that if they did have sex, that sex in a couple of months would turn into a kid. And then they would have to bear the consequence of both childbirth and child rearing. The second part to the intelligence, which of course is also that even if they realize the process of reproduction, that they care about the consequence of having sex now and the cost the mother will have to pay later. If the chimp had that sort of intelligence, the argument goes is that these mothers or these female chimps would choose, for one, first to delay childbearing, and second, to have a total smaller number of children. Now, from an evolutionary perspective, that is inefficient because the mother doesn't take into account that the chimp bears also half the genes of the father. So from nature's point of view, the child is a public good. Half the genes belong to the mother, half the genes belong to the father, but the mother is not going to take that into account in making her childbearing decision. So she's going to choose to have less kids than would be optimal from an evolutionary perspective. So to get things back to maximizing fitness, which is what evolutionary theory predicts, nature then reacts to the fact that these chimps became intelligent by developing a menopause. And what does menopause do? What menopause does, of course, is basically retards the ability of these chimps then to delay childbirth and child rearing. Because if they wait too long, they won't have any kids at all.
So it's kind of a signal to young humans or young chimps that have acquired the intelligence, the signal that you have a biological clock.
That's exactly right. So to the extent that we have young women who complain about the biological clock and what it means, the whole point here is that nature imposes that clock basically to get young women to get going on building a family. Now, fair or not, we suddenly see that it works in the right direction.
Is there any way we can test this theory, Aloysius? I mean, is there any evidence we could go back and look at from primitive societies, for example?
So this is, like I say, the theory is suddenly speculative and it's kind of interesting, but it also says that looking at hunter-gatherers today is not the right way to test this theory. Because the theory basically says, look, this problem is going to arise from evolution perspective as soon as chimps or other primates get a level of intelligence, and suddenly hunter-gatherers already know, understand the reproduction system and the consequences of reproduction. And in fact, hunter-gatherers try very much to control the reproductive process. They practice contraception by both the rhythm methods and other methods, which doesn't work very well. They also practice homemade abortions, which is also dangerous and don't necessarily work very well either. But what that does tell you is the hunter-gatherers clearly want to control their reproduction. So suddenly testing the models using hunter-gatherers is not the right way to go. Now, the theory does have a prediction, though. Now, whether we get tested in our lifetime or whether you actually want to see the validation of tests in your lifetime is not necessarily something you want to experience. Recall that I said that the whole point of having sexual desire is that these chimps don't understand that you have to have sex to have babies, so nature directly makes chimps value sex. So when the chimps ovulate, when the female ovulate, their desire for sex increase, and in fact, males also know that the female chimp is ovulating, so they have sex, and then the baby comes naturally. Since humans know where babies come from, having a desire for sex is redundant, and especially when they have contraceptive, then having just a desire for sex is not enough to have babies. They have to want to have babies. So therefore, having sex by itself doesn't serve any purpose in terms of maximizing fitness. So one of the predictions of this model essentially will be human sexual desire essentially becomes obsolete from a fitness maximization point of view. Now, whether we'll ever be able to live long enough to see that, I don't know.
Aloysius, yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.